Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. Meteorologists, elected officials, and property owners agree Hurricane Florence could have been much worse. Originally a Category 4 hurricane, the storm came ashore as a Cat 1 before stalling out and dumping a record amount of rainfall on our state. Andy Coburn, associate director with the Program for the Study of Developed Shorelines, believes policymakers need to use this latest storm to rethink how we build up our coast, starting with the expensive proposition of beach renourishment. I spoke with Coburn earlier this week at his Western Carolina University office. Well, Andy Coburn, thanks for joining us on News and Views.
It's my pleasure, Rob. Thanks for having me.
The hurricane season in general is always a busy time for your organization, but with the Hurricane Florence disaster of recent days and weeks, obviously, what's your overall take on things?
I think we were very fortunate in terms of the storm losing strength before landfall. We were following it very closely, as I'm sure everybody in North Carolina was, and South Carolina, and probably Virginia. And all indications were that Florence was a Category 4. It was heading towards the southern part of the North Carolina coast. And based on what we were receiving data-wise from the National Weather Service and the Hurricane Center and some other sources, it appeared that the storm surge was going to be something that we had not experienced maybe since Hazel in the 50s. Fortunately, that obviously did not occur. The surge inland was much worse than I think we anticipated, but the surge along the immediate shoreline, it turns out, from all indications, are that it wasn't anywhere near as bad as we thought it would be.
But of course, that's not to say that there weren't terrible problems. Can you talk to us about what you've been able to divine thus far in terms of what kind of impact the storm had on the coastline of North Carolina?
What we're starting to see in the last day or two is a significant erosion of dunes, especially on Topsail Island and Figure Eight Island, and somewhat also on Wrightsville Beach. There's extensive damage to walkovers and steps and porches and those kinds of things. The amount of property damage along the immediate shorefront is moderate to minimal. Again, I'm saying that based on preliminary reports that we're receiving. We are trying to get up in the air as soon as we can. We often fly after hurricanes to document impacts, and we've been doing that since Hurricane Hugo in 1989. It's quite a bit more difficult logistically when we have a storm of this size, which has impacted so much of the state, to get up in the air. But on the ground, reports are that, at least on the barrier islands, we dodged the bullet on this one.
The broader point to be made here is that as lucky and as fortunate as perhaps we were, the reality is that it's just a matter of time, right? I gather that that's sort of the central message that I keep hearing from you folks and other experts, is that we're going to have to come to grips with the fact that our shoreline is changing. And there's, at a certain point, there's only so much we can do to prepare for that, to prevent it, or to even fix the damage once it occurs.
There's really not much we can do based on what we have already allowed to occur on our shorelines. And that's not just in North Carolina. That's basically anywhere along the eastern Gulf Coast that is developed or is developing. What we saw in Florence is the fact that the storm did not do what we anticipated it would do. And, of course, we have no bearing or say over, you know, what a storm will do or not do. Initially, from our experience, and we've been doing this for over 25 years, we were all relatively certain that what we were going to see in Florence was a combination of a Hurricane Floyd and a Hurricane Fran all in one. Obviously, what we end up seeing was a storm that was even much worse than Hurricane Floyd in terms of the flooding, the magnitude and the scope and the duration of the rain. We did not see the Fran-like impacts. I don't think anything that we have done society-wise along the shoreline has contributed to the reduction of impacts. It's just one of those things where it lost its strength. It didn't do what it was going to do, or at least what we anticipated it would do. But that doesn't mean that later on this hurricane season or next year, that Fran-Floyd hybrid, that Hugo, that Sandy, will hit us. It's just a matter of time.
As we say, there's only so much we can do. There's only so much sand we can pour onto beaches, and at some point, it's just not going to do any good anymore. At some point, we're going to lose some of these areas.
That's a good point. One of the beaches that Florence impacted is Wrightsville Beach, which just finished a major renourishment episode. The Army Corps of Engineers put sand on Wrightsville Beach, which happens every 4 or so years. Another area that was impacted that has had significant beach nourishment is Bogue Banks, although the winds along Bogue Banks were blowing parallel to the shore, so they didn't have they weren't going to have the wave or the surge impacts that, you know, we anticipated farther south. But you know, these nourishment episodes, nourishment projects, whatever you want to call them, they're sacrificial. And so the millions and millions and millions of dollars of sand that's placed on beaches is not a permanent thing. It's a Band-Aid that provides a false sense of security for the most part to property owners behind that beach. And we didn't see any benefit, at least initially. We don't see any benefits of nourishment as a result of Florence. If I can take a step back and go back to Sandy in New Jersey, where there was anecdotal evidence that there was reduced damage, property damage, behind beaches that had been nourished. And as a result of that, the Army Corps of Engineers ended up getting $15 billion to nourish beaches. We're probably going to see the similar kind of thing as a result of Florence, where the Army Corps of Engineers is going to get a lot of money to do a lot of nourishment. FEMA will come through and probably pay some communities that paid for their own nourishment projects to put sand back on the beach. And the evidence just isn't there that that is something that we as a society should be supporting through public tax money.
Am I right that it gets harder and harder? Eventually, there's less sand immediately available. It gets more and more costly to do these kinds of projects. Aren't there parts of the country where they're literally facing the prospect of not having any sand to re-nourish the beaches with?
That's true. There's a lot of areas that are out of sand. Miami Beach is the first one that always pops up.
Right.
They are exploring the possibility of going to the Bahamas to get sand to nourish Miami Beach. North Topsail Beach and some areas on Topsail Island lack compatible sand. When we talk about nourishing beaches, when we talk about sand, we always have to use the term compatible, because there are guidelines and rules in North Carolina and in other states that qualify what kind of sediment can be placed on that beach, and mostly for aesthetic and environmental reasons. And there's just not a lot of beach-compatible sand that's affordable in a lot of areas. And so these communities that were able to get the cheapest, best sand so far, and some areas may be able to go out and pay and continue to get the more expensive but still compatible sand moving forward, at some point are going to have to understand that, you know, it's no longer fiscally responsible or economically feasible to spend the money to put that sand on the beach, because even if that nourishment project prevented all damage from a storm, the economics still aren't going to be there to justify that cost. And in addition to that, not just the cost of the nourishment projects and the potential benefits, it's the distribution of those benefits and the equitability and the fairness in terms of who's paying and who's benefiting. These are all the issues that we have been discussing for decades now. There is some more awareness, I think, amongst funders at the federal level that, you know, the benefits of nourishment, if they are there, to whom do they accrue, you know, who's paying for it, and some of the things that we need to be discussing. But then a storm like a Harvey or a Florence or a Sandy comes through, and then we react and just pump money into doing these kinds of things and putting everything back the way it was.
There's one other sort of question, I think sort of key question I want to get to with you, which is that, is there a best case and a worst case scenario for what North Carolina and other parts of the East Coast will have done and will look like as we go forward? I mean, what should we do? What do you fear we might do?
Well, I fear we might do nothing.
Or just more of the same?
More of the same. The status quo. And when we talk about options, we talk about the do-nothing approach and the status quo, which a lot of people confuse as the same thing. But the status quo is we're reactive. We know these areas that are being impacted by Florence are vulnerable. They're low. They're flooding. They flooded before, obviously not to this extent. Some maybe have. And we know the people who live there don't have insurance to cover these losses. We know the federal government is going to pay billions and billions of dollars. And can we sustain that moving forward? Is there a political will to do that? Is it fair to allow people to continuously suffer through these events moving forward? What if we have 2 or 3 of these in one season? You know, we haven't experienced that yet. I mean, that's another thing to think of. What can we be doing better? How can we look at the impacts of storms, whether it's on the immediate shoreline or inland? And there's a difference when we look at those two areas. When we look at Barrier Islands, those are primarily investment properties and businesses. And when we look at communities that are being impacted inland, those are neighborhoods, and they impact people's livelihoods and their jobs and their communities and their schools. And so there is a disparity in the level of affluence in each, and there's a level of disparity in how we view the impacts and then how we respond to them. And so, again, my fear is that we don't understand the reality of what we have, what we have to deal with, and how do we address it.
Andy Coburn is the associate director of the Program for the Study of Developed Shorelines at Western Carolina University. He's doing incredibly important research and analysis. We hope more and more people will listen to him, pay attention to his research, check him out online. Thanks for being with us, Andy. We'll do this again soon, I hope.
Thank you, Rob. It was my pleasure.
Up next, one of North Carolina's top pollsters tell us what voters know and don't know about the constitutional amendments on the fall ballot. Stay with us.